So good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. Yeah, great to see everybody this morning. So my name is Chuki, and obviously I'll be leading us a little bit today. And just for those of you who have never been here when I've been leading before, I'm very informal, so questions are very welcomed, and in fact, I will ask for them from time to time. So before we get started, just if you would please double check your cell phones, make sure they're silenced. And the children's program is going today, so we'll do just a couple prayers together, and then you all can go on to your classes. I'll let you know when in just be a couple minutes. Trying to think of what else you might need to know. The white prayer books are behind you if you're in a chair, in front of you if you're on a cushion, and on the end if you're at the pews. So why don't we go ahead and get started with just a couple of prayers. So if you turn in your prayer book first to the very first beige sheet, we'll be doing Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra. We'll do that three times together. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Then we'll continue with the four immeasurables, both in English, and then we'll do it in Tibetan. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Sam Chen Tam Che De Wadang De Wei Gyu Dang De on the bottom of that pink sheet, we'll do those two mantras at the bottom, Green Tara's mantra and Chen Reizig's mantra. Let's start with Chen Reizig's mantra, and we'll do that eight times. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And now Green Tara's mantra, and we'll do that seven times. Om Tare Tu Re Soha, 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 Om Tare.
re tu ta re tu re so ha. Om ta re tu ta re tu re so ha.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, so the children may go on to their classes. Wonderful. Yeah, well, thanks y'all for coming out. More people than I expected today on a Mother's Day and with a retreat going on in Black Mountain. So I always like to start out with just a moment of really just rejoicing about how amazing it is we have the opportunity to gather here. You know, Kadampa Center is part of FPMT, which is sort of the mother organization of about 160 centers all over the world. And Lama Zopa Rinpoche is the head of that. He's a spiritual director of all those centers, including ours. But we were started by somebody who just had the idea to start this center, Dr. Don Brown. Some of you, of course, know him. And he came and thought, hey, this would be a cool idea, and asked Rinpoche for permission, and then it went from there. That was in 1991, and it's just been individuals like Don who've then sort of thought this is a good idea and contributed. It wasn't some other organization that gave us the money to buy this building. It was just some of the people in this room and people who are in Black Mountain right now at the retreat. And so it's just really amazing if you think about what it took for us to be here right now, and then we get this chance to talk together. So just we can rejoice in that and maybe have some gratitude. At least I know I do. And for those of you who may not know, we do have a retreat that Kadampa Center is sponsoring over in Black Mountain for 2 weeks with our spiritual director, Lama Zopa Rinpoche. So if this is your first time here, normally there would be quite a number more folks here, but a lot of them are in retreat right now. So rejoice for their opportunity. And of course, rejoice that Geshe Gelick, our resident teacher, has led us so skillfully for the last 15 years. And it's just all really amazing things that come together. So for anyone who is interested in finding out a little bit more about what's happening at that retreat, if you're not able to go yourself, you can still stream parts of it live every day. And the link to that is on our website on the homepage. And, in fact, you can also come here at 7:30 each night for the remainder of the retreat, which will be through, I guess, next Saturday night will be the last night, and then they'll finish Sunday, but there won't be an evening teaching on Sunday. That's correct, isn't it, Joy? I don't think there's a teaching on Sunday evening. Yeah. Well, you can check on the website. I'm pretty sure Saturday night's the last one. Yeah. Ah, okay. All right, so Joey's the one that's been opening the center for us at 7:30 each evening if you want to come here and watch the streaming live. And so when's the last time? Thursday night? Okay. Yeah, so Thursday night. If anybody else wants to take over Friday and Saturday, let me know. But otherwise, Thursday will be the last time that we'll have the center open. So you're welcome to come for that if you're interested. Okay, great. So let's take just a couple minutes. We'll do a couple of the meditations that Geshe has been teaching us. The first one that we're going to do is called nine round breathing. And the idea for doing this meditation is that as we're going through our day and doing our thing, you know, we kind of often are going off in many directions, and we create some sort of what Geshe calls wasteful energy or wasted energy. It's energy that's not necessarily, you know, unified and moving us in one direction. And so this practice helps to clear that out. And, you know, get rid of anything that's like that, that's stuck. So it's three sets of three that makes the nine. You start out, and I'll just show you at first so that we can all know how to do it. You start with your ring finger on your left hand, and you place it over your left nostril, and you inhale through the right. And you do that slow and steady, and then you switch over, you still use your left hand, but you switch over and block the right nostril and exhale through the left. And you do that set of three times. And then you switch and you use your ring finger on your right hand You block your left nostril. Sorry. You block your right nostril. Inhale through the left. Exhale through the right. And do that three times. Then for the third set, you just inhale through both nostrils and exhale through both. And you do that three times. And that makes a total of nine. So did I lose anybody yet? Okay. All right, so let's do this together. We'll just do it obviously much more slowly than I just did. It's supposed to be, you know, a calm, not a speed process. So we'll start with our left, block our left nostril, and inhale through the right. We'll do three sets like that. So inhale. Switch and exhale. Switch and inhale. Exhale. Do one more. Then switch hands. Use the right to block the right and inhale. Switch and block the left and exhale. Switch and inhale. Switch and exhale. Switch and inhale. Switch and exhale. And then through both nostrils, inhale. Exhale. Do that two more times. Okay. Why don't we try it one more time? I won't say anything this time. And that way you can see if you kind of got it or if you have any questions afterwards, you can ask them, okay? So just do it on your own at your own pace. But just try to remember, probably even a little slower than I let it that time if you're able. I have asthma. I breathe pretty fast. So, but if you're able, you know, slow is nice. It's calming. So let's just do it on our own for just a couple minutes. Just do like one round on your own. Okay. Great, thanks. Thanks for playing along. Anybody have any questions? Yeah. You mean like from your diaphragm or more higher in your chest or I've never really heard instructions about that. I mean, in general the idea is sort of a deep full breath, you know. But I've not really ever heard anybody speak about exactly from where. Okay, so now there's another meditation that Geshe-la frequently teaches us that's counting our breaths. And the idea of this is a couple of things. One is that it strengthens our ability to concentrate. You know, concentration can be thought of kind of like a muscle, right? So you want to really be able to build that up and be able to concentrate more and more strongly when you intend to. So that's one of the things it helps with. And also, if you're if you notice that your mind's agitated with anything negative, whether it's anger, frustration, jealousy, anxiety, I mean, any negative thing going on, this can help sort of reset you to neutral. And then from there, you can work on something positive. It's real hard to go from neutral, from negative to positive without sort of that stop in the middle. So this can be sort of the reset button. So in our tradition, it's taught there's sort of 7 points that you think of as you're getting ready to meditate. It's the sitting posture. So I'll just go through it quickly because a lot of you have heard this many times, but if anybody has questions, definitely feel free to come ask me afterwards. But if you're sitting in a seat, you put your feet flat on the floor. And if you're on the cushion, just your legs crossed, if you're comfortable doing that, seems that everybody is. Then you want to have your shoulders sort of relaxed. Ideally, your arms would be sort of away from your body. For a short meditation, it's not nearly as important, but if you're going to do a longer meditation, that's the instruction, so the air can flow so you don't get so hot. And your hands, in our tradition, we have the left hand on the bottom, the right hand on top, and then the thumbs touching, so it looks like this. If that's not comfortable, just do what's comfortable. You can put your hands, sort of just on your knees, whatever feels comfortable in your lap. Then you have your back straight, and that's the very most important piece of all this, if that's the only thing you take away from it. Having your back straight really is helpful. And so if you're sitting in a chair, it can usually be helpful to move sort of away from the back of the chair because you can't really have your back straight if you're leaning back. So I've heard it described sort of like either a stack of coins, imagine your spine like that, or like there's a balloon, a helium balloon coming out of the top of your head and it's kind of pulling you up straight. And your head is just a little bit forward, and that helps with sleepiness. If you tend to get sleepy during meditations, having your head forward can help with that. Then your eyes can either be lightly closed, like you don't want them just, squinched real tight shut, but lightly closed, or you can have them open and just have a unfocused gaze sort of out in front of you. And having your eyes open can help letting that light in again if you get sleepy. But if it's easier for you, closed is fine. And then your jaw should be relaxed because a lot of us hold tension there, so sort of pay attention to that. Your lips are just lightly touching. And then you take your tongue and you put it at the back of your teeth, sort of at the top of your mouth. And that helps, again, for longer meditation. That helps you not get thirsty and also helps with the saliva production so you don't swallow as much. So those are the 7 points, but mainly just, keep your back straight. And so what we're going to do is we're going to start on the exhale. The 9-round breathing we started on the inhale. So this is the opposite. You start with the exhale, then you inhale and you count 1. You exhale, you inhale, and you count 2. And you go like that, sort of as long as you can go. And then at some point, because for most of us this will not come completely naturally because we're not doing it all the time, we'll start thinking about the grocery list or the to-do list or whatever it is. And then we'll go, was I on 4 or 5? And you can't remember. So then you just gently start back at 1. It's not like, I'm such a loser, I can't remember if it's 4 or 5, right? It's just be gentle and say, look, I missed it, I'm going back to 1. And you just keep doing that. And I look at it as each time we have that trip up and we go back to 1, that's kind of like doing the rep of the weights. That's kind of what we're looking for, is where we're not able to do it so that then we can start over again. And each time we do it, of course, it's not just a direct linear progression, but over time we get so we can concentrate better. And it also is a great tip if this is something you do regularly. You'll notice, like, maybe I have no trouble getting to a certain number, but today I can't get past 5. So there's something going on in my mind. Maybe I need to look at that. So it can be a tool that you use almost diagnostically for yourself as well. So yeah. Is that a question? So ideally they say it's through the nose. Of course, if you've got a cold or allergies or having trouble breathing, do whatever you need to do. But, yeah, ideally it'd be through your nose. Yeah. We have other ones that certainly are through the mouth that are, like, more aggressive breathing. They're like, those kinds of ones. But this one's not like this. This should be really just be a natural breath as much as you're able. When you're doing this at first, a natural breath is pretty hard to count, right? Because if you're not tuned into that, it's hard to even know, am I inhaling or exhaling? So it could be helpful to label it, like to think exhale or think out and think in. It's okay to label each breath like out, in, 1, if you need a little support to try to realize what's happening. So we'll do this literally for maybe only 2 or 3 minutes. I'll ring the bell when we're finished, and just try to see how high you can get. I think that's all there is to it. Any questions? Yeah, okay, great. So, how was that? Okay. Sometimes the reaction is, oh, it was terrible because my mind was so crazy, right? And that's okay if that's how it was, because we don't spend a lot of time looking at our mind. Sometimes we're kind of shocked when we stop and look and we find out, oh, my gosh, all the time, all that's going on. So it can almost feel like you're kind of getting worse if you look. That's not really true because you're just seeing what's there, you know, and we're usually too busy to notice what's there. But I like to let folks know, like, don't panic if it was like, oh, it was not so much fun, I felt a little crazy, you know, because that just means you're taking a step towards seeing what's really going on in your mind, you know, and it will get better if you keep trying it, so. Okay. Great. So I'd like to say Happy Mother's Day to everybody, and I think my mom is watching, so hi, Mom. you know, in Buddhism, we talk a lot about mothers and being grateful to the mother. And so I just like to, I guess, maybe we could take a minute and rejoice about whether or not, you know, you have a great relationship with your mom personally. Some of us do, some of us don't, but somebody along the way, probably a lot of bodies, helped us out, right? And so we can have gratitude about that, and we can really think about, you know, the times we did get support from folks. And it is kind of amazing if you think about all it took to raise us up, and, you know, a lot of effort went into that. So there are people for whom we can be grateful for that. So, but that's not going to be my topic today. I felt like I had to acknowledge it, but we're close. We're talking about generosity today. And one of the things, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the 16 guidelines. We got this book. I'm not sure if we have it in the bookstore right now since so much is in Black Mountain, but in general we have this. And this is 16 guidelines are the basis for our curriculum with the children most of the year. There's a couple months we do some other things, but these are sort of 16 secular ideas, you know, basic values, honesty, respect, you know, those kinds of things. And generosity is one of the 16 guidelines. And I thought I'd take just a minute to talk a little bit about where the 16 guidelines came from. Lamzop Rinpoche, our spiritual director, was here on Saturday, last Saturday, a week ago, and we had the great fortune to have him teach here. And he talked a little bit about the history of universal education, which is the foundation that was started through some of the members of the FPMT to promote the secular ideas of compassion and wisdom, 16 guidelines being one of their main projects. And so Lamzop Rinpoche was talking about a little bit of that history on Saturday. And basically where these came from was in the 7th century, there was a king in Tibet who had invited some philosophers from India to come and to teach some of the Buddhist ideas. And the 16 guidelines were created back then, and they've been carried forward in Tibet as part of their culture for a long time. And so there's all kinds of secular applications for this. I know the curriculum we use here with the kids is used literally all over the world. I can't remember how many countries use it, but and it's used even in some secular settings. I think some Montessori schools use it. So there's four themes in the 16 guidelines. It's how we think, how we act, how we relate, and how we find meaning. And so the generosity falls into that second one, how we act. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. Okay, so I was thinking about generosity in prep for today, and I was thinking, you know, it's sometimes so easy to get overwhelmed with the idea of generosity. You know, there's such a great need all the time, and it's sometimes hard to figure out, you know, where to start, and it can sometimes cause us to be a little paralyzed, and you know, that overwhelmed feeling maybe causes us not to act. And so I was thinking about, I bet most of you have heard this story, but I love it, so I'm going to tell it anyway, about the man walking down the beach, and there's all these starfish out on the beach, and he starts tossing them in one by one. And you can see way down the beach, and I mean, it's just endless, all these starfish. And another guy comes by and says, you know, it's hopeless. Why are you doing this? There's, you know, you're never going to get them all in before the sun bakes them. You know, it's hot today. And he says, you probably won't even get 10% of them. Why bother? And the man on the beach throws one in and he says, well, it makes a difference for that one. You know, so we help who we help. You know, the difference we make is where we do it. So anyway, I love that story. So I'm wondering if, just to get us going this morning, if anybody has any examples either where they sort of felt overwhelmed and got stuck, or where they maybe tried something, you know, as a motivator, if they have a particular habit that helps them, or if there's just anything you can think about kind of related to this that might be something to share that maybe somebody else would like to hear. I know it's a hard question, and it's the first thing. Yeah, Sylvia.
I just think generally how hard of an environment is, and how all of us need some kind of help.
Mm.
So is that what you're asking about? What motivates us to be generous?
Well, sure. What can help you when you feel stuck, like it's maybe too big?
Yeah. I think about how hard things are for everybody, and how when somebody helps me personally, what a difference it makes for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that the reverse is true, that if I do something for somebody else, even if it's just that one person, and I know from experience with the volunteer work I do that ripples out, mm-hmm. that person can help somebody else.
Yeah.
So I think of it that way, is that kind of a, you throw a stone in the pond and it just kind of ripples out.
Yeah, so that's a great example where, you know, even what we do right here, we never know exactly where it's going to go out and be a benefit. But if it's positive, there's a really good chance it's going to go out and be a benefit, right? Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Sylvia. There's a hand up here.
So I've developed this habit, and I didn't always have it, where like my tendency is to be very compartmentalized with how I go about my day and trying to get things done. And so if someone comes in my office or comes to talk to me, in the past I would be kind of like, you know, tense about that because it would interrupt what I was trying to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been kind of experimenting with this new way of being that seems to be working, which is someone comes in my office or comes to ask me something, and I just sort of drop everything, and I'm okay about it. I just take a breath, and I'm okay, and I realize I can come back to it, but at that moment, that person obviously really needs my attention, or they wouldn't have approached me.
Yeah.
So that's been something that I've been experimenting with.
Yeah, so how to be generous with your time. Yeah, that's a hard one.
And not getting so tense about, oh my gosh, you know, it's interrupting what I need to get done.
Right, yeah. So not having that expectation that here's a to-do list and I'm doing it, you know, no matter what, but having a little space for being a benefit. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
One thing probably it happens with me, and I don't know if it happens with other people, sometimes I feel shy to use my generosity because I feel that I'm not, what I'm offering is not good enough or it's not matter, it's not going to make much difference. So I end up not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel bad about it because I would like to. I want to be generous. I am compassionate, but I don't feel that it's what I'm offering is not good. It's not enough.
Yeah. So
to change that.
Yeah.
To make any big change.
Yeah. So sometimes maybe feeling like what you have to offer isn't good enough can be the barrier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like it's hindering me to be generous.
Yeah.
Not knowing that, thinking that it's not enough. You know, that I don't have enough money to donate, or I don't have enough time to put into it. So I don't know how to deal with that. It's hard.
Yeah. So this idea that if we can't sort of make a big difference, it's hard to do anything. We can get stuck. Yeah. And I think, you know, the starfish story for me is one of the antidotes to that. I mean, if you really believe that story, you know, then that can be inspiring. But I think you raise a really excellent point. Sometimes it takes some bravery just to say, I really only have $5, but I want to use this $5 to be a benefit. You know, the need might be thousands in whatever example you think of, but I've got five, you know, and I can offer that. Or often time is much trickier and maybe more important to talk about than money, you know, where like maybe there's an organization you care a lot about and you can see that they have this huge need, you know, but maybe there's one small thing you can do to help, like stuff envelopes, or, you know, I mean, still understanding that that's going to be a benefit, even if it's not the whole benefit that you want, you know. And in Buddhism, we talk a lot about setting an intention and dedicating. It's sort of like every positive thing we do, we try to bookend it with setting a positive intention and then dedicating whatever positive things we created. And so I don't know if that helps at all, but you could think about it like that. Like, you know, I can only stuff envelopes for an hour for this organization. But at the start, think, you know, my intention is to absolutely forward them on their path of whatever it is, you know, that you want to support. You stuff the envelopes for an hour thinking about that. And then at the end, you dedicate to make this combined with all the other efforts of everyone else who's trying to do that and eventually reach that goal. Yeah, I don't know if that's helpful. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so having kindness to yourself to realize that, first off, you are worthy. What you have to offer is worth something.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a really excellent point. Say that again.
We are our own worst enemy.
Yeah. Do you want to say some more about that?
Yeah, well, I think that we, you know, most of the time we're by ourselves or we're thinking, you know, like she said, that, well, this is what I do is not going to matter, because we're thinking, well, we don't have the monetary funds to make a difference. And I think a lot of that might start when we're younger, maybe growing up. You know, most of us probably grew up in a traditional household, maybe, I'm thinking sometimes. And, you know, how you grow up makes a big difference on what impacts you when you're older.
Sure.
Because you're still carrying those, a lot of those thoughts. And you know, and your parents might not be as open-minded. You know, a lot of our parents probably aren't as open-minded. So, I know my parents are, you know, grew up, you know, probably thinking, oh, well, you don't have that money to buy this or that. And it just makes you kind of restricted.
Yeah, so I think what you're talking about is these habits we create, right? And we don't even realize that we're creating them when we're younger.
Carries on.
And then we carry them forward.
Your adulthood.
Absolutely. Yeah, and there's a story I'm going to tell later on about someone who actually tried to change his habits. I'll share that in a little bit.
It's hard to break those habits. You really have to be present and conscious at all times to try to break those.
That's right. We have to make an active choice moment by moment. We're going to do something different, right? Because otherwise, that's what we do.
You go right back to them if you don't realize it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that makes a big difference.
Yeah. So, yeah, last one. Oh, yeah.
one new habit I've been working on is I often go walking for exercise late at night near downtown Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife's always afraid if I take my wallet, I might get robbed. But I have been taking like $3 in my pocket or $5. I leave my wallet behind, take $3 or $5. And there are really quite a few homeless people and other people really down on their luck who are down there around Glenwood and, you know, Edenton Street. And so now when it's happened several times, somebody comes up to me and they start telling me their hard luck story, and I can say, oh, well, here's $3 or $5, and, you know, it's in fact all I've got with me. Here it's yours.
Yeah.
And so I'm starting a little generosity practice that way.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, so practicing shifting from either feeling like we have something to guard or saying no or whatever these habits are to saying I'm going to intentionally be generous. You're planning to be generous before you even leave the house. You don't know who's going to be the recipient, but yeah.
I don't know if it'll happen that night. It doesn't happen every single night.
Right.
There are quite a few people down there who would like to ask you for something.
Yeah.
When they do, then I give them something.
Yeah, so that's a great example. Yeah. Okay, last one, and then we're moving on.
I just feel inspired to share this with you because yesterday was my birthday, and a friend last year did, on her birthday, an act of kindness for each year that, you know, that she's lived. So I tried to do that yesterday, and one of them was just to buy someone's coffee that was in the line at Starbucks. And I really did it, you know, just honestly just out of, you know, generosity, just because they felt good. And what was really cool is that when he received his coffee, because I took mine and I just saw that the cashier just charged my card, you know, whatever he orders. And then she comes back, gives me my card, and she says that he actually paid for the lady behind him.
Right.
So that inspired him to do the same thing. So he paid it forward, like, right away. So I thought it was really cool. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Oh, I rejoice at the number of acts you did for your birthday. That's fantastic. Yeah, and that's a perfect example of what Sylvia was talking about the ripple, right? You did this positive thing, he did it, and who knows how many after. I mean, I've been hearing stories in the news about, you know, 500 people in a row and, like, how, you know, it can really be a huge ripple. And even if it's a small ripple, it's fantastic, right? Because, again, for the guy behind you and the woman behind him, it made a big difference. And who knows then, they were maybe nicer for their day, you know? I mean, it just goes out and out. So that's fantastic. Yeah. So, you know, in Buddhism, we talk really about three kinds of generosity. Things we've been talking about fit into each of those. The first one is teaching the Dharma, the generosity or the charity of the Dharma. The second one is, they usually call it freedom from fear. So it can be saving a life. It can also be helping someone with a problem, you know. So anything in that sort of category. And then the third one is the material things, usually what we think about when we say generosity, right? And so this charity of the Dharma, you know, that's like what Geshe Gelug gives us every week, you know, in his untiringly unceasing efforts to teach us ways to work with our mind. And Yangtze Rinpoche has talked about that. Really, any teaching you do to benefit someone can be counted in that category if it's 100% pure intention from your side that that's what you're doing. Then the second one, this charity of fearlessness, protecting from danger. Again, Yangtze Rinpoche talks about that being anybody, like helping anybody with a problem. And, you know, there's some classic examples. I have a personal one. My stepbrother is a volunteer firefighter in Illinois. And just a couple weeks ago, he and his family were out driving, and they came across an accident. And it just happened. They didn't see it happen, but it just happened. And there was a family, a father, a mother, and a small child stuck inside. And they, him and a couple other people who had found this accident were trying desperately to get into the car because the doors wouldn't open and the windows were all rolled up. And they were trying to get in, and they, you know, it's hard to break those windows, right? And he didn't have any of his firefighter gear with him, so he couldn't get in. And the car caught on fire. And he and these other folks were able to smash in the rear window. And they were able to get the father out, but they weren't able to get the mother and the child out. And in response to this great tragedy, he's now starting a nationwide effort to make those hammers that break the windows more available so that people can always have them in their car, because they were conscious, the people in the car were conscious, and they could have broken the windows if they'd had the tools to do it. And so this story really struck me about generosity in many ways. Obviously, these people risking their lives to save others. And also then the effort going forward to say, okay, how do we make sure that we can save people in the future, you know? And it inspired me to right away order from Amazon one of those little hammers to have in my car, you know? And I was thinking at that time, who should I order these for? Who, you know, who needs these? And so, you know, this freedom from fear saving people can take so many forms, you know? I mean, just thinking about, like, what could you carry around with you that might be a benefit, you know? We don't recommend this anymore for CPR, but I used to be a wilderness first responder, and I always carried a face shield with me because, you know, doing mouth-to-mouth like they do in TV is a really good way to, you know, harm yourself, right? But if you have a face shield, it's all good. So, anyway, they don't recommend that for CPR anymore, but, you know, like in the past, I used to carry that with me, just always, what if, you know? And I know parents, of course, know about this, right? You've always got, you're lugging around a bag full of toys and food and whatever for your children, but it can just sometimes be an interesting experiment yourself to think of what could I be carrying with me that might help me benefit others, you know, because that's a huge form of generosity, right? Even if you don't ever use it, the intention of thinking about that is of great benefit for you. Yeah, okay. And then the third one, the third one is material charity, right? And, you know, that can be some of the obvious ones, offering cash when someone asks for it and that kind of thing. The paying it forward that we already talked about, yeah. And then there's a TED Talk, and for anybody who wants it, I can give you the link, but there's a TED Talk of a man named Sasha Dichter, I think, Dichter. Yeah, and he's a director of business development for this venture capital fund that works with nonprofits. And he realized that in his day job, he was thinking of all these ways to be a benefit. But then when he took the train home from work every night, he was saying no to all these people on the train, right? You know, all these people asking for money. And so he decided to do this experiment to change that habit. He said, I realized my habit was no. I was trying to make the smart choices. You know, everyone always says, well, you never know what they're going to use it for, whatever. He said, and I was letting smart get in my way of doing right. And he said, so I really wanted to figure out how to shift so that I felt more generous. So he said, for 1 month, he decided that any nonprofit, any street musician, any, you know, homeless person, anybody that asked him for money, he was going to say yes. And so for 1 month, he tried this experiment, and he said he noticed that, you know, as the month wore on, he started to shift the way he saw himself, and he saw himself as a generous person. So it's just like you were talking about our habits, right? We have these habits, a lot of them we don't even realize we have, right, because they're so ingrained. But we can make different choices about how to shift them, you know. And I'm not saying that's the right thing for any, you know, I'm not saying everyone in this room should try this experiment, but we all have different experiments we can try that get at whatever it is that our challenge is, you know. If it's sort of the example earlier of not feeling worthy, you know, maybe there's a way you could say for the next certain amount of time, a month or however long, you know, I'm really going to be conscious of that and look at ways I can shift how I see myself about that, you know. Try to challenge these ideas that we have, because that's really at the nut of Buddhism, right, is sort of trying to look at, you know, what are our habits and how do we transform them into something positive. So, you know, another thing we do here at the center is we have these water bowls, right? And those are very much about generosity. They're making an offering. And some people find when they do water bowls on their own as a consistent practice, they start to feel more generous. It's a really easy way to offer something, right? It's just water. It's not, you know, a big expense. But it's something that you can imagine you're offering the entire universe, you know. And so that can also shift the way that we think about things by doing that. And as an aside, we set the water bowls up here for sort of all of our teachings, most events that happen here at the center, and it's our community that sets them up. So if it's a practice you'd like to learn how to do, just come see me afterwards and we can talk about trying to set up a time that you could learn how to do it, because we have a sign-up sheet for people who do this, so anybody could do it. So, yeah, Dorothy.
And so I've been approached a lot by people asking for things. Me and our other coworkers have come up with ways to help them without giving them money. Because a lot of times we give them money, they run over across the street and buy drugs. So we found a way that if they ask for something, we're like, oh, we'll go in and buy you lunch. Someone pulls up and they need gas, we buy them the gas. And so it was a different way to help someone without feeling like you're giving them money for drugs or alcohol. And so we feel like we're more of a benefit that way. And by buying them lunch, it's like if you're out with your coworkers, you'd buy them lunch. So why not just buy the stranger lunch for the day? And it's been a much more pleasing way to help people that were on the street than just by handing them money.
Yeah, so you found a way where you feel like you're really not doing harm, you know, that your money's a benefit, but you're still acting on it. Yeah, because one of the things in this TED Talk that Sasha talked about was he said that he had always sort of told himself, well, maybe it's better if I give to organizations that help the homeless. He said, but then I would never actually really give to those organizations. You know, it's like you think it through and you're smart. That was what he was talking about, the smart versus the right. Like it might be smart to find these other ways, but if you're not going to do them, you know, you're not putting your money where your mouth is. And in this case, you are putting your money where your mouth is. You're just trying to find wise ways to do it. Yeah, that's fantastic.
I also carry, like, apples in my car. So I stop at a light and I get a homeless guy who's asking for money. I'm like, here's an apple.
Right.
Sometimes they refuse it because they don't want food. And I'm like, well, that's what I have to offer you. And
yeah.
They can take it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great example, too. Yeah.
Monetary gifts or whatever. Is it really up to us what they do with the money once we give it to them?
Yeah, so that's a huge question, right?
You know,
I mean, is it only important from our side what we do?
Right.
Or
because we're thinking with our, you know, we're thinking about us,
right,
more so than them. So we're thinking what we should do. But is it really beneficial to them what they, you know what I mean? Like once we give them the money, is it our problem what they do with it, even though it's our money? But we're giving it to them. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So there's this huge question, I think, even when you look at the teachings. It's like on the one side, it's very important to work with our minds, to be generous,
right?
All these things we've been talking about. And on the other, it does say that it's not, you know, a very wise gift if you're giving somebody something that in the short term will benefit them, meaning, you know, they'll go buy the drugs, but in the long term it's harm for them. So these are like, until we've worked on our minds enough to really have perfect wisdom,
right,
we don't really know the answer to how things are going to be used. I do think, though, you're raising a very important point about strings attached, right? I mean, if you give, and it's sort of mixed, like, I really do want to give this to them, but boy, if they use it for that, that's not good, you know?
Because we can't give enough money away to cure the hump. I mean, you know what I mean? You can't give enough money away to cure the world. You can't get sick enough to make sick people well. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You can't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Sure. I mean, we have to be, it's this mix, right? We have to be wise, but if we're being like Sasha in this TED Talk where it's really shutting us down, you know, then our wisdom isn't really helping us be more generous people in wise ways. It's just making us more miserly, right? And that, I mean, that's important to be honest about which it's doing. And so if you can find an example like Dorothy's where you are trying to be wise about it, but you're still acting on generosity, that's probably a great middle ground. Yeah. But, you know, I've heard quite learned teachers say, anybody who asks me, I give it to them even if I know that they're going to go, you know, buy another bottle.
Right.
And so, I mean, I think, you know, each situation is different and we all have to kind of, you know, keep our common sense and our own situation in mind.
But
yeah.
He was saying, you know, he walked downtown, like, we live downtown too.
Yeah.
Me and my family, we all make, like, go for a walk or, he's right, somebody's always, the other night we was walking and, you know, hey, you know, can I get a few dollars? I need to catch a cab. Well, I know you're not going to catch a cab. You know, or I need to go to the hospital. Like the other day, this lady asked him, oh, I need $20. My friend needs to go to the emergency room. You know, well, you need to call 911. Well, of course, we know they're not going to use it to go to catch a cab. But when you give them, it's the intent that's behind it. Because you know they're not going to do what they say they're going to do with it. So once you give it to them, it's their problem with it.
Well, I think you're raising another good point, which is when we give, we don't, if we give and then we regret giving,
right,
that kind of negates the positive act, right?
Right.
And so we want to be wise about it, but we also want to try to reduce the strings, you know? And there's so many times, even not using this kind of loaded example of the homeless folks or people who are using drugs or whatever, you know, think about a birthday gift you gave and you hope they use it a certain way or, you know, I mean, it's, we mix things up a lot, you know, that doesn't make it a totally bad act that we gave it, but it wasn't purely generous. You know, I've heard people talk about generosity and say, when you clean out your closets and you give that stuff away, I mean, that's nice, but that's not really generosity. That's cleaning your closet, you know. I mean, if you're going to clean your closet and throw it away, but you give it to the homeless shelter, well, that's great. You know, nothing wrong in that and rejoice in that, but that's not the same as, you know, really giving something that somebody really needs and that maybe, you know, you had to think twice about giving, you know. And again, I'm not saying be a martyr about it. That's not at all the point. But it's just, you know, we kind of got to really look at our motivations and what we're doing, you know. Yeah. So I've got a little guided meditation. Take maybe 6 or 7 minutes I thought we could do. And then as always, I have way too much stuff, so that'll probably be about all we get. but let's try this one. This comes out of, again, the 16 Guidelines book. And I modified it just a little bit, but it's mostly the one they have here. So remember, again, just main important thing is to keep your back straight and just kind of take just a few breaths to settle your mind before we get started here. And at the start, it's always great to set an intention. So just think we're going to take a look at these ideas on generosity so that maybe we can benefit our minds and then in turn be of great benefit to others. Okay, so now let your imagination take you to a room in your house, if you have a favorite room or a room that has a lot of stuff in it. Try to imagine what that room looks like and really, you know, take a leisurely look around the room, looking at all the objects that are in there. And focus particularly on all the objects that were given to you as a gift. And if there's nothing in that room, just think of something that was given to you as a gift. try to look back at that moment when that was given to you, maybe the expression of the person who gave it or why they gave it, and how you felt at the time you received it. Okay, and then next, focus on the objects in that room that you purchased for yourself. Each one has its own story. Think about where it came from, what it's made of. Then you can expand your thinking and think who might have grown or woven or hammered or printed, designed, assembled. Carve that object for you to use. Think about how many people were involved in packaging and transporting it. Maybe building the store, staffing the store. Just keep stretching that out more and more as far and wide as possible to encompass all the beings who helped to bring this object into your possession. And the parents of those beings, and their parents, like that. And then think, do you own anything that you did not receive through the generosity of another person? Survey the room and try to find one single thing that's there without the involvement of anyone else. Consider this idea that it's only through the kindness of others that we enjoy possessions, sustenance, and nurture. What are the invisible connections between us that enable us to keep each other alive? And reflect on how you'd like to behave towards other beings. Is there something you can do to repay their kindness? And then to dedicate just rejoice at this effort and close with the wish that may this help all beings be happy. One of the other things I'll just mention quickly in passing that I found when I was looking at today was, they do a lot of studies, of course, on our behavior, how we are generous, and those kinds of things. But one of the things that really struck me was that this was a study done just a couple years ago with young children. And the study was the children were given a bowl of those little goldfish crackers. And the kids sort of recognize, hey, this is mine, you know, it's given to me. And then they were asked to give these crackers to this puppet. And there are snapshots taken during these actions, and then people who didn't know the timeline of anything were to rate when the children were happiest. And it seemed they were happiest when they were actually giving the crackers away. So then they did another experiment where they just handed the child a cracker to give away immediately. So it was sort of like not their own cracker that they were giving away, and they weren't nearly as happy about that. And so I think it's just one of the many things that we find when we do this research of the hopefulness that really we're happy when we're generous. We like to do it. We get something from it. You know, there's a reason why these exchanges take place throughout our lives and why most people really are quite generous. So, so I guess just as a quick way to sum up today, and then we'll do some prayers to conclude. I've got a couple quotes I really like about generosity, and one is by Hafiz. I think he's a Persian poet. I can't remember if he was Sufi or not, but anyway, from the 14th century, and he says, "Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, 'You owe me.' Look what happens with a love like that. It lights the whole sky." And another quote from Shakyamuni Buddha that says, "If you know what I know about the power of giving, you would not let a single day pass without sharing a meal in some way." So, some positive things, I guess, for us. So, so as I talked about at the beginning, you know, the center has been created through the generosity of many, many people, and it continues to be that way. If you're moved to donate resources, we got a box at the back that also has a lovely quote on it. You ought to check that on the way out. If you'd like to donate your time or energy, we have over 150 distinct volunteer positions and hundreds of positions that really means that we have filled for things that happen here. Some of them are the obvious things, but there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. And we have a way you can do that, too. On the website, there's a connection to Volunteer Spot. It's real simple. You don't even have to have an account. You just put in your email address, and you can sign up for different things. If you've got any questions about volunteering, I'm the volunteer coordinator, so please do ask, and can get you hooked up with something. And outside of all of those things, being here today is a great way to be generous, because if we weren't all here together, we wouldn't have a reason to be here together to talk, you know. So just coming and spending your time is really fantastic. I'd like to conclude with a challenge, if you so choose, to think this week about generosity. You know, if a couple times during the week you kind of remember, oh, on Sunday we talked about that, just think about stretching yourself in whatever way seems like a nice next step, and just keep that in mind. And then it's a grand experiment, you know, just collect information, like see what happens when you do it. Is it a good thing? Does it help you? Does it not help you? Did you maybe overstep here? You know, all of this is just sort of, I look at it as we're in this big lab experiment that we are the evaluators. You know, we just sort of see each day what worked and what didn't. So, yeah. Okay, well, I really appreciate all your time. I'd like to read the prayer list, and then we'll do just a couple prayers. And in case anybody doesn't know about the prayer list, you can request yourself or someone else to be on the list. There are little sheets to do it out here in the lobby, and also you can do it by sending an email to dedications@kadampa-center.org. So, prayers for a happy rebirth. All those killed by natural and man-made disasters, especially the Sherpas killed on Mount Everest, all the Tibetans who have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom, Donna Corey, Fannie Lewis, Will Manson, Rachel Cole Matheson, Al Smith, Hansa Pandya, Stuart Russell Thomas, Mariposa the Wonderful Cat. For job search, Jim Kay, Roseanne Barona, James Lillig, Greg Weaver, Ashlyn Kloss, Pooja Sarai, Lindsay Piatti, and Sandy Wimbish. Prayers for health and well-being, Kabje Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Venerable Margaret McAndrew, Venerable Lodzong Tsering, all those harmed by natural and man-made disasters. For the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. For Russell Allen, Lisa Baranski, Jim Barnes, Roseanne Barona, Harvey Bloom, Elizabeth Campanile, Anwar Congo, Dimitri Domondopoulos, Rita Dodro, Paul Dumlow, Paul Foyle and Nancy Osterhoff, Dee Freeman and her daughter Lily, Mildred Gooch, Francis Hayashi, Leslie and Joan Inman, Kenny Jackson and Buddy, Helen Kasanoff, Shanti and Kurt Latimer, Danny Love and Family, R.M., family of Will Manson, Judy Martin, Sean McGarity and family, Tom McGinnity, Brian Miller, J.R. Mooring, Dickie Lee Aldershaw, the family of Hansa Pandya, Aunt Polly, Tom and Jane Cattell, Eileen Rubin and family, Dr. Albert Sons, Jeannie Scario, David Schenk, Rosemary C., Slogtung Topton, Dion Washington, Sandy Wimbish, Dorje and Cadro the Pigs. If you have any names you'd like to add, please say them now. Okay. So turn in the prayer book to that first pink sheet again. And we'll read the dedication verses from Shantideva, and then we'll continue on with the long life prayers. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May all living creatures suffer, commit evil, never fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion, to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Awatari, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as a bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunas' victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior, myself, and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And then we'll say seven green Tara mantras for Geshe Gelug's long, happy, healthy life. Om Tare Tu Le Soha. Om Tare Tu Re 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 Soha. Thanks, everybody.